expertise in teaching in higher education. I'm Helen King, and I've been working in educational development in the UK for over 20 years. I've had experience within national and international projects and initiatives, as well as being based in higher education institutions. I'm currently Deputy Director of the Academic Practice Directorate at the University of the West of England in Bristol. This podcast draws on my experience of working with teachers in higher education, of my own teaching and learning experiences, and from my research. A text version of this podcast, including the full references, is available on my blog at drhelenking.com. In the last episode, I looked at the broad characteristics of expertise for teaching in higher education. I suggested a model that comprises three interacting dimensions in the form of a Venn diagram: pedagogical content knowledge, artistry, and intentional learning and development. In this episode, I'm going to explore one approach to intentional learning and development, which is commonly featured in the expertise literature, that is deliberate practice. As well as considering how this might look, I'll suggest some ideas to get you started in applying this approach to your learning and development for teaching in higher education. Erickson suggested that in many, if not all, areas of work and endeavour, most people reach an acceptable level of competence and comfort and then just stay there, with no interest in continuing to improve. This is okay in teaching if it works for you and your students, but it's unlikely to be an effective long-term strategy. The subject matter may change, the student cohort certainly will, and unexpected events, such as the current COVID pandemic, may force different ways of working. But if you've already developed a mindset for evolving your teaching, you'll have the tools to help you readily adapt. And Erickson's idea of deliberate practice is one such tool. Practice, in the sense of rehearsal, is clearly important for many fields and professions. You have to practice the piano, speaking in another language, or injecting a needle, for example. This practice can occur in safe situations, like playing the piano without an audience, chatting with a friend, or using a simulated vein. We also hear talk of academic practice, a doctor's practice, professional practice. In this context, a professional practitioner is one who encounters certain types of situations again and again, as Schoen suggests. However, simply repeating the same thing again and again will not necessarily lead to expertise. Practice doesn't make perfect, it makes permanent. Repeating the same thing again and again will mean that you get very confident at doing that thing in that particular way, which is fine if it's correct and continues to work. But if it's wrong or stops working, it can then be extremely difficult to unlearn and relearn a different way. You have to break down the neural pathways and rebuild them in a different configuration. So practice has to be thoughtful, considered, planned. And in that way, each situation encounter, each classroom experience becomes an opportunity for deliberate practice. So what is deliberate practice? In the words of Erickson et al. In their 1993 seminal paper, deliberate practice is a highly structured activity, the explicit goal of which is to improve performance. Specific tasks are invented to overcome weaknesses, and performance is carefully monitored to provide cues for ways to improve it further. So the practice, or the way the situation is addressed in its next encounter, is deliberately and intentionally planned, rather than just being a mindless repetition. In their description, Erickson et al. Set out the three constraints which limit individuals from achieving expert performance. These are resource, motivation, and effort. However, these constraints might be reconceptualised as the factors required to improve practice and develop expertise. So, resources. Learning and development can't happen overnight, nor in a vacuum. The development of expertise takes considerable time. Research indicates that for many fields, a minimum of 10 years' practice is required to achieve world-class levels of achievement. Particular physiological or cognitive characteristics, or natural talent, may give some individuals an advantage. But deliberate practice is seen as a defining factor for developing higher levels of performance. If sufficient time is taken, expertise can be developed by all, and each day that goes by will see small improvements along the way. As well as time, the other resources required are learning materials and access to a teacher or coach. Of course, it is possible to learn something entirely independently, but a teacher, mentor, or coach will be invaluable for providing feedback and steering you in the appropriate direction. Feedback is key to deliberate practice. We need to know, see, or hear how we're performing in order to identify where improvements are required and whether our practice is improving our performance. In music, this feedback might come from you recording yourself and listening back, or a friend or teacher listening and telling you what they hear, or even from an audience reaction to a formal performance. In sport, feedback comes from how you feel, comments from your coach, how well you interact with teammates, or how you perform versus competitors. Taking on board and responding to feedback is essential to practice that is deliberate rather than mindless repetition. Learning materials can take many forms. They might be text, video, or audio with information and guidance, or perhaps specific tools, exercises, or activities to help hone your skill, or maybe just a quiet place to think and plan. But even with all these tangible resources available, it may not be possible to practice and improve if the environment is not conducive. For young people, their family or close community must be supportive and willing to take them to their practice spaces or provide appropriate resources at home. For professionals, a culture of learning and development within the workplace is necessary if the majority are to be motivated to practice and improve rather than just a self-driven minority. The second aspect of deliberate practice is motivation. Given that resources are required to engage in deliberate practice, you have to be highly motivated to persist throughout your career to develop and maintain expertise. As we'll discuss in a later episode, this motivation can be extrinsic and/or intrinsic and is strongly influenced, positively or negatively, by the people and environment around you. As Erickson et al. Suggest, the lack of inherent reward or enjoyment in practice, as distinct from the enjoyment of the result, is consistent with the fact that individuals in a domain rarely initiate practice spontaneously. So the third element of deliberate practice is sustainable effort. It's really important to acknowledge that deliberate practice takes effort, be it cognitive and/or physical. In order to maintain motivation and the ability to practice, it should be limited to frequent but sustainable efforts. In many, if not all, fields, better progression can be achieved through small amounts of practice every day, rather than long practice sessions undertaken once every few weeks or so. A habit of frequent practice is also easier to integrate into the day-to-day, such that it becomes part of one's work, rather than being a burdensome add-on. So what does deliberate practice of teaching look like in higher education? So deliberate practice is about intentionally considering how you teach rather than just going about the same thing again and again. Practice, in the sense of rehearsal, is more problematic for teaching than for, say, music or sport. Whilst you can run through a talk a few times, it's much harder to rehearse something more interactive. And even with a talk, something unexpected will always happen that you can't necessarily prepare thoroughly for, such as a surprising question or a technological glitch. So whilst you can prepare and plan your teaching session, you can't practice it in the same way that, say, a violinist in a string quartet might. Rather, you can prepare the broad structure, but the performance is much more like a player in a jazz band who uses what they know to respond to the other musicians, rather than exactly reproducing what they had perfected in rehearsal. After, or even during the performance, they'll consider what went well and what can be improved. This then provides the focus for further practice. Exactly the same process occurs in teaching. After the session, or even during, you consider what went well and where you might need to make small changes to help improve students' learning and understanding. You then intentionally apply this to the planning of your next session, such that daily experiences in the classroom can become a site for deliberate practice, as Stigler and Miller suggest. Once you've identified something in your teaching that you want to focus on improving, there are a wealth of resources available to help you. Feedback is available from many different sources: your students, peers, and your self-evaluations. Feedback can help you both identify the focus for your deliberate practice and inform you of whether the changes you plan are likely to be effective. If you're doing a PG Cert or other course for new lecturers, it's likely that you'll be involved in peer observation. Colleagues will observe and feedback on your teaching, and also you might get the opportunity to observe, feedback on, and learn from others. One of the most useful sources of feedback, particularly when you're thinking about your teaching and how to make small changes, is conversation with colleagues. In my research interviews, a National Teaching Fellowship winning psychology lecturer shared their view on the importance of conversation. I share an office with X, and we've been in the same office together for 11 years, and we talk about our teaching all the time. I think you have to really have to have the space to reflect on it. I think the emotional labour of teaching is massive, and I think there's very, very little opportunity for people to exercise and talk about their experiences unless you happen to make that relationship. The importance of a teacher, mentor, or coach is emphasised in research on deliberate practice and on the development of expertise. If you're taking a formal qualification in teaching in higher education, do make the most of any tutor support available, not just to understand the needs of the course, but to explore your own teaching and how you might improve it. Alternatively, you may have a formal mentor or buddy to support you in your new role. Be proactive in going to them to chat about your teaching experiences. If you have neither of these support mechanisms provided for you, then seek out a colleague with whom you can have informal conversations about teaching. They might be someone you share an office with, someone recommended by head of department, or even a colleague at another institution that you know through your research or professional practice. These professional conversations will enable you to plan and practice deliberately through taking an evidence-informed approach, rather than just basing your plans on your own personal ideas and experiences. There are also many other ways in which you can gather ideas and evidence to inform your deliberate practice, and a suggested list of these is provided as an accompaniment to the blog version of this episode. The other elements of deliberate practice, motivation and sustainable effort, will be discussed in a later episode, including tips and strategies. Newer teachers are likely to have a significant extrinsic motivation in the form of probation requirements, student evaluation targets, and other formal expectations of improving performance. Intrinsic motivation may come from a desire to feel more comfortable teaching or to do your best to facilitate your students' learning. If you are taking a formal teaching course, you may have assignments or activities that will provide deadlines or goals to help structure your deliberate practice. The institutional culture and climate in which you work will also have a strong influence, depending on whether or not it's conducive to encouraging teaching and teacher development. Whether or not you have these external factors influencing your teaching development, integrating and conceptualising deliberate practice as part of your everyday teaching work, and not an add-on, will help you to manage your workload. Particularly when you're newer to teaching, small and frequent applications of deliberate practice can be more effective and time efficient. Though there may be times when you want or need to make much larger changes to your teaching. In this case, having already developed a deliberate practice approach will give you the flexibility and resources to respond to bigger challenges. So specifically, how might you apply deliberate practice to your teaching? Deliberate practice is about taking small steps to develop your teaching with the intentional goal of wanting to improve. It's a process of identifying a specific focus for improvement, undertaking activities that will provide evidence to inform a change to your teaching, including gathering and responding to feedback, then applying and evaluating that change. You will also greatly benefit from the support of a tutor, mentor, coach, or buddy to help provide feedback and discuss your ideas. If this process sounds a bit familiar, you may have encountered it in the similar model of experiential learning proposed by Kolb. The deliberate practice model goes further by identifying the particular conditions that are required to enable it to happen effectively. Check out the blog version of this podcast for a one-page summary guide to deliberate practice for teaching in higher education. So my final word. Remember that developing expertise takes time. Taking small steps will add up to greater confidence and improve teaching and learning. Sometimes a change may be so subtle that you may not notice a difference on a day-to-day basis. One of the benefits of taking a structured approach to your development, and for example writing down where you want to improve, is that you can review this in a year or more time and see how far you've come. As you become more experienced and you develop your confidence and skill in teaching, you'll find that things you previously had to think hard about and carefully plan and prepare for now become much less effortful and much more automatic. This is all part of the process of developing expertise. The idea of deliberate practice is based on the journey taken by a novice as they develop mastery. A later episode on progressive problem solving will look at a model of expertise development based on the comparison of experts with experienced non-experts and how they utilise the time freed up by the automation of skills. In later episodes, we'll also explore different ways of conceptualising intentional learning and development to help you better integrate it into your wider academic practice, including relating it to concepts of career narratives, CPD as a story, and reflective practice, or CPD as research. Thanks for listening. In the next episode, I'll be discussing an element of artistry in teaching, and how Patsy Roddenberg's three circles of presence might be applied to improve student engagement. Don't forget, you can access a text version of this podcast together with a list of references and additional resources on my website, drhelenking.com.